Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that we believe reflects and delivers good old mainstream Canadian values. And we cover the local issues, and we try to do that on a local level, but also around the globe when it's appropriate. I'm Robin Adair, and joining me as always is my co-host with the most, the Croatian sensation, Saanich's great gift to the internet, John Jurisic. And Johnny, December arrives, and along with it, the Christmas spirit.
The Christmas spirit. Thank you very much for those nice compliments, of which I probably don't deserve any. Nonetheless, in my alter ego as Santa Claus somewhere, Robin, it's been inspiring seeing Christmas parades across the country with bright lights, lifting spirits of, as we head towards the holiday season. A crowd of nearly 80,000 packed downtown Victoria for the South Island's 41st annual Santa Parade. Extraordinary. Czech TV again did an amazing job covering this classic parade. Families from up and down the island packed the streets to see the floats, bands, and marchers. And of course, Santa and Mrs. Claus. There's huge Christmas spirit in our community, regardless of faith or background. But you know, Robin, there's always a Grinch somewhere.
There sure is, John. There sure is. And the Grinch in this case is our own federally funded Human Rights Commission, who made some announcements out of Ottawa. We are paying taxpayers' dollars. Taxpayer dollars, we're paying for this information. And this is what they're telling us. Taking a day off on December 25th to celebrate Christmas is discriminatory. That's right. These bureaucratic pencil pushers are telling us that Christmas is emblematic of Canada's identity as a settler colonial state. In other words, our colonial settler society, which that's the label they're giving us, has forced Indigenous children into residential schools with the objective of destroying their traditional native spirituality. But what does this mean to the wider Canadian society? Are we guilty by association to a society that now is hundreds of years old, even in Canada? And, you know, what about the faiths and beliefs of others? And whether they feel uncomfortable with Christmas? There have been polls that have shown that Canadians across the board, whether they are Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Sikh, all the different religions, they like Christmas. They like the celebration. They like Santa Claus. So, you know, have to wonder about the spirit of the season. We asked Mark Milkey from the Aristotle Foundation, that's a think tank, what he makes of all of this labeling. And what about average mainstream Canadians? Are they really colonists and settlers?
The problem with this language actually is also, it's just historically and evolutionarily wrong. You know something? With respect, all of us are settlers, right? We all came from Africa, what, you know, millions of years ago, and people have migrated across the world. There's no pure, you know, there's no pure indigenous culture or society anywhere on the planet. We've all, eventually, our ancestors came from somewhere else, and ultimately all of us came from Africa. That's the evolutionary origins of the human species. It's a mistake to divide people in the 21st century based on whether you got here 5 years ago, maybe you came from Hong Kong, you know, or 80 years ago from Ukraine, fleeing Joseph Stalin, or if your ancestors came across the Bering Strait 20,000 years ago. Look, you want to do this properly in history. And in fact, I would argue the British, for example, signed treaties in most of the country and treated indigenous peoples in British Columbia, even without treaties, as akin to having treaties, because they were trying to do the right thing, the rule of law. They weren't perfect. But indigenous peoples in history haven't been perfect. So no one's history is perfect. What we need to remember, actually, is we all have a shared humanity. And the question is, what kind of country do you want? What kind of civilization do you want? That's the question should be asked, not are you indigenous or settler or a colonialist? That doesn't get you anywhere.
We have said over and over and over on this show that First Nations deserve respect. And where we can need a boost and support to help them achieve full self-sufficiency on their terms. But calling them downtrodden and all of us intolerant doesn't help anyone achieve anything. However, Let's shift, therefore, to a related topic. The open letter signed by Victoria City Councillor Susan Kim.
And, you know, John, Susan Kim, the councillor, has now written a second clarification letter where she has, in her own way, apologized for signing the letter. She says she's withdrawn her signature. And, you know, she does apologize, but the letter does cast doubt also, you know, about what she was really thinking. The letter itself was casting doubt on whether Israeli women were sexually assaulted by Hamas invaders a few weeks ago. And this letter was issued by the Sexual Assault Center by the University of Alberta. Within a day, the director of that assault center lost her job. So that tells you how that university felt about the letter. And it also, this letter, condemned widely the whole culture of settlers and colonists. And they were talking about the Israelis, but they were also in the underlining discussion talking about Canada. They did label us as a so-called country. Of course, the analogy clearly drawn between the struggles of the Palestinians with the struggles of our own indigenous people. Right to the point, again, of calling us a so-called nation. So no apology about that, John.
Janice Williams ran for council in the last civic election. She pulled together a petition recently, demanding an online petition, demanding that council censure Susan Kim. Thousands of names have signed that petition. Does Janice accept the councillor's apology? Well, why don't we ask her? Let's zoom her in.
And now joining us once again in the Victoria Rumble Room is Janice Williams, who is leading an online petition asking Victoria Council to censure Susan Kim for signing that controversial letter. And Janice, Council has not acted. Susan Kim has issued two letters, the first attempting to clarify, the second sort of to apologize. To your mind, has the apology been up to the satisfaction of the thousands who have signed your petition?
The short answer is, I think, looking at how people have responded to that second apology, that they've read it, they've considered it, and it's not up to snuff for most people. I think most people are looking at it and going, wait a second, this came out and it took her how many days to issue a statement that wasn't adequate? And then it took how much more time to issue an apology? And then they read the text of the apology and they go, hey, is this really an apology, or is this a, please change the channel, I'm not happy with how this has been received, here's something that has some nice sounding words that might be considered an apology by those who aren't really watching, but doesn't actually take accountability for what I did and how I'm going to do differently in the future to ensure the same problem doesn't happen again. And I think looking at this whole debacle, a lot of people are like, where's the culture of accountability? Where's this code of conduct we were promised?
Now, Janice, Robin and I did a show, a Victoria Rumble Room, within the last couple of weeks, in which we talked about the reference to Canada being a so-called country. There's lots of references in that letter to sort of the implication of that being that that there are references to settlers, colonizers, implication being that it's for about Israelis, but really it, you know, they're talking to us about as Canadians.
And about our First Nations.
Yes. What do you think of this kind of language and these type of labels?
I don't think it's an appropriate set. I don't believe the language is appropriate for an elected representative to use or sign their name to. If you wish to be an activist, if you wish to be an academic, if you wish to travel in those circles instead, fine. But the instant you've chosen to put yourself up for election, and you've kind of committed to the system to at least respect it and engage in a respectful way, she's gone into hiding. I don't think anyone's actually heard a word from her. We've seen written statements, but Have we seen her make a statement in front of the camera saying, I'm sorry? And there are some things that you can't just write in. There are some things that you need to see the person and their reaction. And are they genuine? Do they mean this? Are they really, here with us? Or did they have a gift for putting pretty words on paper?
We'll keep an eye on Janice Williams and, of course, Susan Kim, see if she comes out of the weeds and speaks publicly on this issue. 10,000 names on that petition. And it can't be ignored that people are very unsettled by this. But let's shift now our attention to something that's a little bit more positive, I think. It's a new poll. It was in the National Globe and Mail newspaper, and it has ranked the 100th most livable cities in Canada, the top 100 most livable cities. And guess what? Victoria, number one, number one. And Saanich and Oak Bay are also in the top 10. And this is all great news for the South Island. If you can afford to live here, if you can afford to live on the South Island, fantastic news. But the situation right now is, how are people feeling about life in general on Vancouver Island? And perhaps we'll swing our lens up a little bit further north on the island to get some perspective on how people in the Central Island are feeling right now. Mark McDonald is the longtime, or was the longtime publisher of the Business Examiner, and still remains a much read columnist in that same publication. So let's zoom in, Mark McDonald, now to get his perspective. And now joining us for the very first time in the Victoria Rumble Room, the former publisher of the Business Examiner, who still writes for the publication because his son has taken the helm of power. Mark McDonald is here with us from Nanaimo, his palatial suite in Nanaimo, and great to have you on the show.
Well, great to see you guys again and get reacquainted and catch up, and look forward to our chat today.
Absolutely. Just to clarify, Mark and I actually go way back to the 90s when I was working as a talk show host and program director at AM 900. Business Examiner came up and said, hey, do you want to write a column? So I got to write a column for the Business Examiner and really enjoyed that experience. So I've had that time with Mark. I know that John has also dealt with Mark in his past work life. So it's nice to go full circle on these things. So let's kick off with some questions here, Mark. The feds have been talking about bringing millions of immigrants to Canada. Over the next 5 years, there's going to be a huge sweep of new immigration coming to the country. And the feds are saying that we're going to supply some money for new housing. But affordable housing is a big problem in this country right now, and people right now can't find affordable places to live. So what do you make of this federal strategy? And on top of it, the BC response, where they're going to really push municipalities to get moving on missing middle housing.
Well, I think this is a great question. I've been working in a project in North Cowichan, actually, on which kind of melds into this. So first, the immigration, I think, is great. But you're going to be bringing in skilled people, which is great, who have money, who are not coming to rent. They're coming to buy, which adds more pressure on the market. And what confounds me with the current provincial government, and really civic governments are controlled by NDP and anti-development courses in many municipalities, is they crimp the supply, they make it harder and harder to build, and we have more and more people come. So what happens? The prices go up, and then they scream about affordable housing, and they tighten things up some more. The project I'm working on in North Couch is called West Vista, or the Bell McKinnon Northwest Project. So it's a 31-acre project. There are 850 multifamily homes. And the OCP for North Couch identifies that they need 1,208 new units by 2025, right? So the developers come in, they buy the property years ago. Then one Cowichan pushes in a slate of anti-development people onto council. The new council comes in, they change the OCP, and now this thing has been sitting there for 3 years. It's 500 feet away from the new North Cowichan hospital, which is going to have over 700 employees. The employees can walk to work there. So 800 of those units are sitting there. And so they're hoping to get some funding from the province. And I wrote the premier several months ago about the situation. And didn't get any direct response from Evie, but it's like, this is a solution to the problem. So it'd be interesting to see what they do if North Gouging gets the funding, but they keep crimping supply and demand goes up and people want to come to the island, want to come to BC. So
Mark, you and I have also crossed paths many times through the years.
Yeah.
I don't know when, maybe in bars, who knows? you know, and so therefore, in many ways, the island community isn't that large. You know, we cross paths, we know each other, although it's growing all the time, very popular place to live, even though by the day it's getting more and more affordable, I'm sure. Therefore, you keep a firm hand on the pulse of business opinion. So what are the top issues you hear about from people that you meet and from your readers that, who must be providing feedback?
Well, the two big ones are obviously the homeless issue and safety, security, and then development permits. I have lots of friends in the development industry, and getting through, put it this way, the politicians and bureaucrats are having a race to who can get net zero first. And they don't realize in the practical market what that means. So I'll give you an example in Parksville. They had an affordable housing unit ready to go, funding in place. They just ready to announce it. And then the province comes in with another arm of government to introduce these new net zero regulations, which has driven up the cost of affordable housing 30%. 30%, right? So, and the security issue, we have a building in downtown Nanaimo. It's like the zombie apocalypse down there. Like people, they're bent over, literally physically bent over from the drugs. And like I was saying earlier, we're having to put a fence in front of our building. So the people inside there working inside the jail, if you will. So downtown Nanaimo is really in rough shape. And now the city has announced a new plan for a community in Woodgrove, which I'm thinking sounds good, but have they actually given up on downtown Nanaimo? London Drugs apparently has made it known that they're going to look at closing their Port Place Mall. So because of the crime. So it's just, and the politicians, all they do is we pay an unbelievable amount of taxes. We go to the city and they say, well, it's not our problem. It's the province. The province says it's the feds. Fed says it's the city. So they just pass the buck. Very frustrating. Oh, no. Round and around and round it goes.
So it's interesting with this this issue of the homeless and the drugs and the mentally ill. And there is a group, and there is some pretty senior people in London Drugs are part of this in Vancouver. They started this Save Our Streets movement, SOS. Victoria's jumped firmly on board. I know it's considered a province-wide movement. And, you know, the concentration has been, at least initially, on the big centers, like Vancouver has such a terrible problem for the downtown east side. We've got lots of problems in southern Victoria with street people, but Nanaimo and Prince George and Kelowna, middle sized communities, are really getting walloped here. And it also seems to me that message needs to get out to politicians. But do you see a shift now? Do you see that with this anger and discontentment that maybe the province is realizing if they don't get on board with this, this is what's going to bring them down?
I believe you're right. And it takes, unfortunately, that kind of volume to make the government stand up and pay attention. You know, so yeah, every little bit helps. But they're just, they pass the buck. And let's face it, a lot of these people that, and I this maybe sound too obtuse, but they support governments that give them free drugs and promise them housing. But even if they, I mean, a lot of these people are mentally ill, right? We used to have institutions like Riverview and that. They need to get back to that, where the people refuse to look after themselves. Then you know what? The government's going to look after you, because we wouldn't do that with kids, right? You don't look after your kids' property, the government will step in. With seniors, the government will step in. These people refuse to go into housing that's provided for them. Then what? They shouldn't make every other citizen who wants to abide by the law a prisoner. That's what's happening.
And of course, also you have situations where they've built housing, like the Tally Ho in Victoria. There's housing there now for these folks. and they're having rampant break-and-enters and shoplifting now at Mayfair Mall. It's become a huge problem. We're exporting the problem around the city with this housing situation. We're not really curing or solving the problem for these people. We're creating a much bigger problem for the wider community.
That's absolutely. And people are afraid. Like, down, you know, we just don't go downtown when it's dark. Downtown, then I won't forget it. And I go by to check our building to make sure that it's not held hostage by someone sleeping at the front door. And by the way, I had someone there the other day. I got him to clear out. I got basically verbally assaulted by someone who said they were helping him. Then the very next day, they took a dump in front of my door. That's what they do, right? You complain, and they, and that's not the first time that's happened.
All right. Yeah. On that note, let's take it to the federal level. There's going to be a federal election next year. All the polling is showing Justin Trudeau's Liberals are in a big trouble. However, in places like Victoria, the NDP remains incredibly popular despite national trends. What's the terrain like for the Pierre Poilievre Tories on Vancouver Island? You know, the Reform Party once had a lot of success in places like Nanaimo, Duncan, Port Alberni. Are you sensing history could repeat itself here?
Possibly, but you know, the Conservative Party, and I can't, Pierre Poilievre campaigned with me in 2015, so I like him a lot. But the Conservative Party is a circular firing squad. You know, if the enemy can't defeat them, they'll defeat themselves by shooting each other. So they could get the big picture. The big picture is to get into government. I think it's possible, but Poilievre has had some amazing turnouts. I was at one in Nanaimo. We had 1,600 people show up at the conference center, lined up around the wall to get a picture with them. And what's interesting is, you know, usually the conservative vote is the gray hairs. Is there's younger people there. There's young people, parents with strollers and kids. And he seems to have attracted even some people from the far left, if you can believe it, because of the unaffordability of Trudeau's Canada. So revolution, I don't know. I mean, if you look back to Harper's government, and I think Harper provided good government for Canada, what drove him out largely, a lot of it was the hatred that the media and Trudeau had stirred up. And I predicted at the beginning, I said, this Canadians will hate this Trudeau more than his dad. And we're almost there. So if that comes into the political cycle, the hatred, because a lot of people vote emotionally, then you could see a return back to reform ideas where you had places like Port Alberni voting reform in there for 15 years.
You know, Mark, there's analogies being made by some in the media, etc. Pierre Poilievre is Trump-like. There was a famous interview where he was eating an apple where he really tore apart the fellow who said the same things, right? But there's this sense that there are issues on the right, ostensibly cultural issues, that tend to have, you know, the party start to shoot itself. What do you sense might be different this time around where that's not going to happen?
Well, I think he's recruited is not the right word, but he's got a lot of support from the convoy people, right? And people that were never interested. And, you know, as the word always goes out, all politicians are all crooked and liars. And, you know, but people don't realize they can actually change the system if they get involved. So I think when you come down to things like the carbon tax and then the price of housing, this does affect young families, and they say, well, what can we do about it? Well, there is something you can do about it, right? You can change the government, change some of those policies. So I think there's an awakening to some degree that, you know, we are still a democracy, even though we're not functioning as one now. This is really like democratic socialism at its finest. I think Poilievre presents a glimmer of hope. And through that, with you combine that, you know, a fresh face, with the hatred for Trudeau, you may see a change on the island, but it's NDP provincially and federally, right?
And you know, the fatigue level that's going on with wokeism, though, you can feel it permeating through the country. People are getting very tired of it. I mean, it's reached kind of almost a ridiculous level. I don't know when the tipping point came, but I think we've passed it. I think people really want to get back to the center somehow and back to just moderate Canadianism, which I think is something we all honor and appreciate. So I don't know if Pierre Poilievre exactly encapsulates that, but I wonder whether he's going to benefit from that.
I think he would too. I mean, you have to be careful with that issue because the fact is we've all had freedom to express ourselves. And so whatever this wokeism has come up with, they created a narrative. If you don't agree with me, you hate me. And it's hate speech. And so we've lost that narrative where we're all welcome to live as we want in the country. We're all welcome to make choices, right? And somehow that narrative has been lost, buried in, you better see it my way or you are a bigot and a homophobe or whatever else. That's just not what this country was built on.
And I guess, Mark, a final question from me. We're baby boomers. You know, a lot of us have retired or semi-retired. I mean, you're writing a column. I'm doing this show. Who knows what John's doing? But we certainly are part of a trend of people our age and a little older who've now moved into retirement. And the Canadian pension plan is important, and continuing to get that pension plan paid, considering all the work and all the contributions we've made. And now I see Alberta playing hardball and other provinces lining up against the federal government. Alberta's talking about decoupling from the pension plan. There's other movements towards pulling away from Ottawa on other fronts, but the pensions also around carbon pricing. And do you think that we are now moving to a situation where the provinces are going to get so aggressive, we have the danger of tearing apart the fabric of Canada as we know it?
I'm concerned. Trudeau has been so divisive and intrusive, right? He's put people up against the wall, particularly Alberta. And so I found with interest, I wrote my last column on their move to get out of Canada Pension. Now, whether that will happen, first of all, Canada Pension is well-funded, right? They'd have to put every investment in the toilet before it doesn't pay off for all of us who've contributed all these years. But that was I think it was a brilliant political move. They want to handle the money that belongs to their citizens that have paid in it for their lifetime. So, and then one does it. Like, look what's happened with the carbon tax. They're going to take it out of home heating in Eastern Canada. Next thing you know, the whole country wants it, which I think is great, right? So if Alberta is successful in the CPP, then why wouldn't BC do it? And but I think these are things that are Canadian that really need to hold us together. But I think with the forceful methods of the federal government, it doesn't leave the province any choice but to fight back. And you start nailing that. What's next?
Great to have Mark McDonald in the Rumble Room. We'll certainly have him back again soon, John. But on that note, it's time to wrap up another show.
Wrap, wrap, wrap. One of the Christmas terms, eh? Okay. You bet. What a fascinating show, Robin. We so much appreciate the feedback we're getting on all the stuff we post up. Promise to have a viewer segment next week, as we've been flooded and overwhelmed, frankly, with views and opinions. And you can reach us, should you have not been part of that feedback, on all of our various platforms. The mothership, of course, is Facebook, although soon shifting, it appears, to Twitter and YouTube. And we also participate in Facebook news and groups. And we also are on TikTok and Instagram. For now, Robin, I remain, I think, reasonably quite settled, but never a settler. I am John Jurisic.
And you know, John, I'm Robin Adair, and I am proud. I'm proud that there were colonists that came to this country, including my family, and founded a nation with freedom of speech and freedom of religion, which allows us all to continue to rumble on.